to the inaugural Car Envy podcast. This is number one, and you know, we're a couple of Canadian dudes, and we're going to talk about the world of cars and whatever kind of interests us relating to cars. So, my name is Peter Dushensky, and I'm here with
Lucas Elke.
And we're going to start off by talking about something not really related to the news of cars, because well, there's a lot of that going on. We're going to start with something a little more esoteric. So let's kick it off with Luke. You've been doing a bit of research lately about Sergio Scaglietti, the Ferrari designer.
Yes.
And what have you come up with? What have you been reading about this guy?
Well, he not too recently passed away at the age of 91. And he is what many consider to be one of the greatest car designers of all time. Synonymous with the prancing horse, with Ferrari, of course. And he was instrumental. He was the man behind a couple of the greatest, like the 250 GTO, the California, and the 250 Testarossa as well, which, right there, three of the greatest Ferraris of all time, both for their performance and most notably for their looks. And so it just kind of made me think, do we have those same great designs coming out these days? What were so great about those? And are the cars that are coming out now going to be just as classical? So what do you think, Petey?
Well, I think it's going to be, it's always going to be tough to match those because those are road cars with racing pedigree. And you just don't have that anymore. Now there's been, like we see in every niche of the world, there's been specialization in the last, you know, in the last couple of centuries, but definitely noticeable in the last 50 years, so that there's all these little niches. So a race car is now infinitely more specialized and pretty much not even legal on the road. And where you, as you have this in kind of all walks of life, or you can see it with, you know, the SUV used to just be one kind of thing. And now we have crossovers, we have sport utilities, we have sports activity vehicles like the X6. And I think that there's just a bigger gap. The gap has never been wider between what's on the road and what's on the circuit. So I don't think we'll ever quite get that appeal that those 250s, that those early Scaglietti designs had. Because, you know, they had that racing pedigree, and that's what made them so badass.
True.
But I think there's definitely some really cool designs right now. I'm actually getting increasingly excited about what's coming out of Japan. And I've always been a fan of Japanese cars and Japanese design. But the last decade hasn't really left, you know, much for an enthusiast to really sink their teeth into. So a couple of concepts that were just released at the North American Auto Show in Detroit last week were Acura's NSX concept and Lexus's LFLC concept, previewing probably the next SC430 or SC450 kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I'm really hoping that, I think there is still some good design left in the world.
I agree with you. I definitely think there is. Just talking back to his old cars and what I think are so beautiful about them, and what you look at what a lot of people would consider the most beautiful modern cars now, what they seem to all have in common are these long, gorgeous, flowing, uninterrupted lines. Something that just looks smooth, wave-like. You know, you see those huge pontoon fenders that the 250 Testarossa has, and they just...
Yeah.
Oh, they look like a woman's hips, like something you just want to rub all over. And then the modern ones, they have the same characteristics. You look at the Alfa Romeo, the 8C, or the Aston Martin DB9, DBS. Those are kind of considered those new greats that I think they share those same characteristics. But then you look at something like the new Aventador, for instance. And I just don't feel like it has that. It seems choppy. It seems broken up, almost distorted with all the little wings and odd lines and shapes. I don't know if those kind of cars are gonna be classics, but I wonder if that's what things are coming to.
Well, I think that there's room in the world for both. And I think that starting in the 70s with Bertone and the Lance Strato Zero concept, I think that angularity kind of just made its way into the design world, and that it broke into architecture, it broke into art, it broke into car design, and that there's, like I said before, there's just more specialization. So there's just, there's more room, there's more tastes, we're more accommodating than ever of people's particular interests and particular likes and dislikes. And so now there's kind of something for everyone. You know, no matter what your fancy is, there's a bit of, there's a car for you, presumably. So there's an Aventador for, you know, younger playboys or more aggressive types. And then there's the sensual curvy cars like a Maserati Gran Turismo or an Aston Martin or something like you mentioned. So I think that there's just now more variety, and I think that they'll maintain their classicism in different ways, and that those cars are exotic. So they just pretty much will be classics in 50 years. No matter how we look at it now, we'll look at it with rose tinted glasses then, and we'll be like, oh, remember when cars had internal combustion engines? Those are the good old days.
Well, I hope we never have something quite that drastic.
Well, you know, hope or not, it's fairly inevitable in all likelihood as battery technology improves and, you know, the electricity grid ramps itself up. I mean, emissions will just basically, emissions restrictions and emissions concerns and concerns about the way that we're changing our environments, we don't really have a good grasp on all of the effects and impacts that we're exerting right now, because we're just kind of pumping so much out there. So we're going to have to start kind of reeling in, scaling back a lot of the stuff we're pumping into our environment.
Yeah, definitely. And I do agree with you with that. Do you think, and I don't know if this is feasible whatsoever, but what every critic of the electric car who's driven one has said is that it doesn't have that same kick, that same put you in the back of your seat kind of feel. It's such a smooth, quiet, seamless acceleration. Do you think to really grasp on with the diehard enthusiast that they'll have to start producing an electric motor with kind of a combustion feel to it? Or if that even possible?
Well, with Tesla, I think Tesla's got some pretty fast cars, and I've never driven one. I've never driven any electric car, but when you have full torque, 100% torque at zero RPM, I imagine there's got to be at least, it's going to be smooth and somewhat linear because there's only, most of them only have one speed gearboxes, but a lot of that kick and that bang and that crack that comes from, that results in being knocked back in your seat is in the gear change. And Lamborghini is one who's maintaining that really abrasive, really noticeable gear change, even with their new single clutch gearbox in the Aventador. But other manufacturers are shifting to more seamless transmissions, like Ferrari, that's pretty much only selling dual clutch transmission vehicles now.
Yeah.
So I think that they're all kind of going the smoother, more transparent, more linear acceleration is going to be less and less foreign. So that ultimately a transition to electric cars probably won't be as jarring, but you just don't have the exhaust note. You just don't have any engine sound to really, for the diehard enthusiast. But like you said, but even using that term, diehard enthusiast, you know, they're dying. and for the vast majority of people, if we're practical and pragmatic about it, aren't really concerned. They just want to get from A to B quietly, efficiently, and throw a week's worth of groceries in the back.
Yeah, I guess the enthusiast probably only accounts for 1% of the driving population, that kind of thing.
And I'd even consider myself an enthusiast, but for my day to day driving, like I just see there's just no point in having an Aventador. I mean, I drive 10 blocks to the office, drive around to do a few inspections. And You know, the Fiat 500 that I have in the garage right now is, frankly, a dream car. Like, it's the best car I've ever driven.
Yeah, I've been seeing your high praises for it. What can you give the listeners a little more in depth before you drop the review on it?
Yeah, really, it's just it. Believe it or not, it's comes with an automatic gearbox, which is a bit kind of. You wouldn't think that an enthusiast would be drawn to the automatic gearbox when there is a 5-speed manual available, but the 6-speed automatic just works well in the city. It's unobtrusive. It's a 500 or Fiat 500 lounge model, which is the top of the range model,
yeah,
with all the options. So a little Bose sound system that sounds pretty decent, even though I think it only has 4 or 6 speakers. I don't know. It's just a perfect little city car, tight turning radius, fuel efficient, comfortable, good ride with these winter tires. I think they're Nokians.
It's fantastic. Like, do you feel a little emasculated saying these things?
No, man. Because to be emasculated, you have to have the ego of, you know, the alpha male, and I certainly do not. So, you know what? It works well. It works perfectly in the city. It fit into a parking spot that not even, a Chevy Aveo could fit into.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely has its benefits.
Oh, yeah. And for living in the city, like, I live downtown, I work downtown. For my lifestyle, a Fiat 500 is an ideal car. Even though it was designed for the little streets of Rome or something, it works well in this one little corner of the Arctic that we call home here in Edmonton.
Good point.
So that's a quick little synopsis, I suppose, of the Fiat 500.
Nice. Something to get the readers to look forward to.
Definitely.
So talking back to, we mentioned variety a few times. There's something for everyone in terms of design, in terms of style, size, whatever you may be, more so than ever in history, it seems right now, there's a car for absolutely everyone, spanning every imaginable idea they've produced it seems. Do you think at a point there's going to be too much? Will manufacturers have to rein it in a little bit?
I think that they'll rein it in when it's not profitable. I mean, their companies are profit-driven. So, you know, BMW is going to come up with an X4 that'll slot in between the X, based on the X3, kind of just be a baby X6. And I'm sure Audi will come up with, Audi will start selling the Q3 here. The Germans are the worst proliferators of differentiation in their car lineups. It seems they're always trying to figure out new niches to one-up each other in or to be unique in.
Yeah.
And I think that the advent of platform sharing, especially, you know, the Volkswagen group is the most famous, or definitely the best at it. I think that as long as they can, completely differentiate a product to the customer satisfaction, whether it's just through branding or, sheet metal design, I think that it'll keep going. Predicting the future is kind of a tricky thing to do. So I figure that as long as there's profit to be made, that these companies will continue to pursue it. And as long as they're, there is a bit of ego for sure between the big German three.
Yeah.
The luxury car segment trying to always one up each other in something. So I don't know. What do you think about it? Do you think it'll keep going?
I think it will to a certain extent. I feel like a lot of these niches, it's almost as if the auto manufacturer does a good job to convince the consumer that that's what they need. It's not necessarily that they're going out to find this void, it's that they're almost creating it. It's like the old Simpsons episode where, the mass corporations, they come up with Love Day to slot in between Family Day and Valentine's Day. Just something for people to spend more money on and feel like that's what they need. Which, I guess all the power to them, that's what companies are good at, and the successful companies seem to do that quite often. But I just remember reading a little clip. It was from one of the big three. I can't remember who, I want to say Porsche or Audi, saying that eventually this pace won't have to sustain, won't sustain itself, that they will have to rein things in a little bit. So it mm-hmm. will be interesting to see, because right now I just seem like it's almost tough to keep up with as an enthusiast. It's difficult to know where they're going and who's producing what, because there's a different itineration for everything. Audi has like numbers 1 through 8 right now. So and you think even what, just 10 years ago they were probably just 2, 4, 6, and 8.
Yeah.
So it seems like it's been a massive amount of growth very quickly. So
it has been, and I think that you're right. I don't think the pace is probably sustainable, but I think that even once the pace is done, there'll still be a shitload of variants of all these cars. And once it'll be interesting to see what China and India are interested in terms of all these variants of luxury cars and or variants of any kind of cars, and to see how susceptible they are to the marketing nuances, and whether they'll lap it up the way Western Europeans and North Americans have.
Yeah, that's a good point, and I'm not too sure, because you see, it seems like those kind of up and coming markets work on two ends of the spectrum. You get the new money in China and India, not necessarily the new money, but the really up and coming money, where they love their high end. Ferrari's making sales in China like they never have before, and all these companies are really booming in China. However, on the other end of the spectrum, you hear the Chinese and the Indians and everything, they're making kind of the lowest end cars known to man, the cheapest, you know, $2,000, $3,000 cars. So it will be interesting to see where all these itinerations fit into the mix for these newly powerful countries.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I think that's where most of the growth is going to be. Or, well, it's not. It doesn't take a brilliant scientist to figure that out. But, yeah. So, I mean, but we have all kinds of even variants of... We have lots of variants coming here, too. It's not just there that's getting a lot of differentiation. Actually, speaking of the Fiat 500, I read a little blurb yesterday that said there's going to be a Fiat 500 wagon, like a five-door, coming to North America.
Like the Mini, what do you think of that? Mini Countryman kind of thing? Would you buy a Fiat 500 wagon? Similar to the Mini Countryman, you're saying?
I think so. It'd probably be like that.
I wouldn't. No, I'm sorry. I wouldn't be buying a Fiat 500 in the first place. Maybe for my 17-year-old daughter a few years down the line. Not a few years down the line, many years down the line. I guess I'm the aforementioned somewhat of an egoist when it comes to the car I'm going to be driving. But in that case, I'm new to living in a big city, and I'm living in the heart of a big city in Toronto here. And a Fiat 500 does seem like the most practical option. I tend to bike and use public transit right now. But I think back to what I was driving in Alberta, and none of those vehicles would be practical here.
No, I mean, all these massive trucks that we have roaming the streets here in Alberta just would make no sense there.
Yeah, but I guess in terms of a five-door, I'd probably go with a Volkswagen, a Golf, or a Rabbit or whatever it may be before I went into the Fiat. Maybe that's because I don't want to support a car that J-Lo is the spokesperson for, but...
Yeah, she hasn't really done that car any favors, but I've actually managed to just completely avoid all of her advertising, so surviving.
Might be difficult to do for too much longer, but who knows.
Yeah, but on speaking of other car news and other car differentiation stuff, it sounds like this sub roadster, or this kind of I don't know if it'd be like a Miata type thing, but the Volkswagen, Audi, Porsche, like it would be a baby Porsche and then a Volkswagen Blue Sport, and then some kind of Audi Roadster has apparently been canned.
Really?
The Audi R4. Yeah. Huh.
I wonder, who do they do market research into that, or is that just purely like numbers-based politics? What do you think that is?
I'm sure they do some market research, but I think a lot of it is just kind of... I can imagine Porsche not really wanting to go there right now. Yeah. I think Porsche is really interested in keeping themselves more premium and not, and just kind of adding more variants than they are in adding new model lines at this point. I think that they expanded now that they have four full model lines, and they'll be adding probably a two-door Panamera 928-ish successor, I think. That's probably their priority.
And so, is the Cajun still on its way?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that, too. Yeah, the Cajun is definitely still on its way. So they'll be adding a fifth car, too. And Porsche makes all their money on their sedans and their SUVs. So
yeah.
I think that they're not really interested in going for this enthusiast market. I know we keep coming back to the diehards, but I think that the diehards are dying hard, and they're not the lucrative portion of the market that these really very profit-driven German companies are looking for.
Yeah, that's got to hurt a lot of people. But at the same time, an interesting side note to that is, have you seen BMW has confirmed that they will be producing a manual M5?
Oh, no, I didn't see that.
Yeah, which is very exciting, because I remember I was kind of complaining to you about Ferrari nixing the manual a few years back. And you said, well, that's what the market is now. And we're just talking about these smooth automatic and semi-automatic transmissions. So I wonder if someone in BMW finally put their foot down and said, enough is enough. We have to stay somewhat true to our roots here, guys.
Yeah, I think that's kind of a weird idea for them to add the manual, because there's just not going to be the uptake, I don't think, to justify it. I mean, it's they're trying to pander to people who write the news rather than people who buy the cars.
Yeah.
And I think that's very much that there's a big differentiation that Porsche is a company certainly that understands that, and BMW as well, that there's a big difference between the people who talk a lot on the internet and the people who open their wallets and buy, you know, luxury sports cars and sports SUVs and sports everything.
Yeah. Which one of those two do you fit into?
Well, I mean, I think I'll always fit into the talking, analyzing end of it, because it's just such a wretched investment that I don't think I would ever see myself, you know, buying a brand new $200,000 911 turbo, or, you know, $200,000 Cayenne turbo or something like that. I just don't see, I just hope I never have that much money, frankly.
Well, if you...
Or I hope that I can find better things to do with it.
Yeah, although if you do... I guess that $200,000 price point isn't quite there, but you look into further up on the spectrum, and it's up into the $500,000, the million, and the multi-million dollar cars, and those are very sound blue chip investments. But those are for... Well,
I don't think so.
Those aren't even one... it's a fact. You look at the Ferrari market right now, and it does have its ups and downs like any market does. But you look at recent prices, and Ferraris are setting record prices. And I'm not talking new cars, I'm talking more old ones.
Right, but for new cars. But if you're buying a new car, it'll be 40 years before it's worth the same again.
Yeah, and that's if it ever is as well, right?
And it probably will be, but who the hell is going to wait 40 years?
Well, that's pretty difficult to predict, because you think when the guys are buying up their old Hemi Barracudas and the Superbirds and everything for $3,000 off the lot, they weren't thinking, heck, this might be worth $1 million one day, 700 grand, right?
No, and it's ridiculous to think that, you know, these new muscle cars are going to be worth anything like that. And there's absolutely no point to buying, you know, the Indy 500 Pace Car Edition Challenger. You just look like a tool now, and it's absolutely going to be worth nothing because it has all these nasty decals on it. And yeah. maybe at Barrett Jackson in 40 years, someone will be deluded enough, but it's going to be so beat to shit by then that no one's going to want it.
Yeah, well, I guess we'll find out in good time.
I guess when we're old men and we're looking back at this podcast, we're going to be like, oh, when I was a boy, I had all these crazy predictions. And we'll be eating our words, I can guarantee it.
Yeah, hopefully this thing will still be up on the internet in 40 years and we'll look back and find out.
I hope we have the internet in 40 years.
Oh, please. Now we're just digressing, but it'll have to be around.
Yeah, let's not go down that rabbit hole. That's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, anything else new and exciting in your car world?
In my car world, I've got a couple cool cars coming down the pipeline in the next month or so. I've got four cars coming up. The next one we have is the Kia Rio 5.
Cool.
That's coming up this week. Next, after that, we have... I'll have the Scion IQ in the garage, which a car I'm actually really looking forward to because I do like me some city cars, and I think that it's maybe Toyota's first creative thought or creative product since the Prius, maybe. And then what else? And then I also have the Ford Explorer EcoBoost, so the 2-liter EcoBoost front-wheel drive. That'll be interesting to see how that handles our winters and how that turbo engine is. I guess that'll be the new engine that's in the Evoque. And since that's probably as close as I'll get to the Evoque, I'll just have to extrapolate from that.
Yeah, that'll be interesting because I wonder if that'll factor into a lot of Albertans. You know, Ford has a pretty good stronghold on Alberta.
Big time.
And... you think those Explorers, those things are good at trudging through the snow and taking your family skiing and out to the cabin and everything, but is a front-wheel drive version of that going to do the trick? Might be tricky.
I think it's the first front-drive Explorer ever. It's got to be, because they're all rear-wheel drive-based, or 4x4 before. Yeah. So, I mean, I think front-wheel drive's a good setup. I mean, the weight's over the engine, and... The weight of the engine is over the drive wheels. And so I'd say front-wheel drive is definitely safer and more predictable for most drivers, maybe less fun for the odd enthusiast. But I think that a front-wheel drive Explorer, assuming it has winter tires, of course, which I would hope it would, I think they'll be just fine. I wouldn't foresee any problems. The other front-wheel drive cars, as long as they have winter tires, have been... very predictable, very stable.
Yeah, that's true.
Don't need all-wheel drive, you just need winter tires.
Speaking of that, a funny tidbit is my dad, for the first time of his life, going against every word he's ever spoken, bought a brand new car. And it was Toyota RAV4. However, he had to special order it because he got the two-wheel drive, the front-wheel drive. Probably the only front-wheel drive RAV4. Heck, in Canada, who knows?
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
On several levels, not only did Mr. Elke finally plop down for a new car, but not finally, not like you have to. I don't see any point in it personally. But that's crazy that he got a front-wheel drive RAV4.
Yeah. You have to special order it. Like, he could have picked one of 10 four-wheel drives off the lot, yet he was insistent on getting the 4.
He wanted to save I guess it's $2,000, probably. Yeah. You know, that's a decent chunk of change. That's probably almost, you know, 7% of what he bought the car for.
Yeah, that's true. Frugal ideas that haven't been imparted upon me, that's for sure.
No, somehow, maybe it skips a generation.
Yeah, that could be true, I guess.
And so what else is... any other cars being bought? Is Larry still driving that driving you around in his Golf?
He is, yeah. It's still ticking, still does well. You can hear him coming from a couple blocks away with that diesel engine putzing around. but again, talking to city cars, that's a perfect one. If he knew how to parallel park, I'm sure he'd get in a lot of good spots. but yeah, nice vehicle for sure.
That's funny that you say it's a perfect city car, because for those of you who don't know, we should explain that Larry is my brother, who is a good friend of Luke's, who also lives in Toronto with Luke. And Larry drives a 2003 Volkswagen Golf TDI. And our dad, Larry's my dad, also has a Golf TDI. And it's currently frozen outside in the parking lot because it's, you know, minus 40 here with wind chill. And that car will not start. So it might be a perfect city car for Toronto. It's a very good city car here most of the time. But right now, it's not a car you want to leave outside. But then again, I shouldn't really talk because my protege is also outside, frozen shut.
Yeah, I don't think freezing is particular to the Volkswagen diesel. It's pretty much any car left out at minus 40.
Yeah, it just will not start if you leave it out there for like 5 days.
That's a tough concept for, I think, some of our more fair-feathered listeners to understand. Is that it is so cold up here that cars won't start.
I'm going to chime in with a quick story. Remember the first time I moved to Ontario, I told my friends, like, yeah, like, cars don't, you have to plug cars in Edmonton. They're like, what, do you drive electric cars? I'm like, no, they are so cold, you have to plug them in. They're like, no, but why? Like, I don't, what are you driving? It's that cold.
Yeah. We're at the same latitude as Moscow.
Well, remember a couple years back, we were the coldest place on Earth. I think we were, like, ahead of Siberia or something like that.
Shit. Well, that's something to brag about, right?
Yeah, most definitely.
Cool, dude. Well, I think that for a first podcast, for a first Car Envy podcast, we gave it a pretty good effort. And I think that there'll be some people out there many people out there who will appreciate what we've done. So I think with that, we'll perhaps wrap up this inaugural Car Envy podcast, where we have a couple of Canadian dudes talking about car stuff, and we'll perhaps sign off for this week. I am Peter Deshensky.
And I am Lucas Elke.
And that's all, folks. See you later.
Take care.